is real peace and security when? And Brother O'Corey, please.
Few headlines from 2020 and 2021. NPR. U.S. signs peace deal with Taliban after nearly two decades of war in Afghanistan. CNN. France's president says a U.S. and China back a world truce, and he thinks Putin will definitely agree. Reuters. Britain backs Putin idea of five-way summit of world powers. That article continued saying, Britain said on Friday it supported Russian President Vladimir Putin's idea to hold a summit between the leaders of the permanent members of the UN Security Council to discuss international peace and security measures. But here we are in 2022. What headlines have you been reading? Why? Why are real peace and security so elusive? Because this isn't a new thing. I mean, for centuries, men have sought peace and security. And at best, they've achieved only a few short periods of temporary coexistence. As a matter of fact, if you are a student of history, usually you refer to it in periods of war. The 7 Years' War, the 100 Years' War, 30 Days' War, the War of 1812, the Spanish-American War, the American Civil War, World War I, World War II, the Cold War. So you had Korea, Vietnam, Lebanon, Chechnya. And with each one of those proxy wars, you thought of a different decade. So why? Well, it's because they don't understand the real reason why peace and security are absent. But God's word gives us two basic reasons why attaining real peace is so elusive. The first reason we'll extract from 2 Corinthians 13:11. 2 Corinthians 13:11 says, so this is a letter to the congregation in the city of Corinth. They had just followed direction, cleaned the congregation. Jehovah's Holy Spirit was there. And concluding his letter, he says, finally, brothers, continue to rejoice, to be readjusted, to be comforted, to think in agreement, to live peaceably. And the God of love and of peace will be with you. So they were able to live peaceably because they were with the God of love and peace. The reverse is also true. If we're not at peace with God, the source of love and peace, then we won't be at peace. And so mankind is not at peace with God, the source of love and peace. That's reason number one. And reason number two is that the world is ruled by Satan, the source of hatred and war. So what we're going to do is we're going to consider or think about these reasons, or as they say in the media these days, we're going to unpack these two reasons. We're going to look at why real peace and security are dependent on being at peace with God, and how Satan's removal will open the way to peace. And we're also going to define real peace and security so that we all know what we're talking about. And finally, we're going to see what we need to do in a practical way. So real peace and security is dependent on being at peace with God. And we find this at Jeremiah chapter 10 and verse 23. So let's open to Jeremiah 10, 23. Because we're going to find that man was created to depend on Jehovah and to obey his laws. He says at Jeremiah 10, 23, I well know, O Jehovah, that man's way does not belong to him. It does not belong to man who is walking even to direct his step. So how are we to understand this verse? I don't know if maybe you've heard this illustration, but let's take that sentence, it does not belong to man. And let's change it to, it does not belong to a pig to fly. But we take the pig. And we train the pig And we train the pig, train the pig, train the pig. And then we throw the pig off a cliff. What's going to happen? Why? Because it does not belong for a pig to fly. So when will man be able to direct his step independent of God? When pigs fly. Because what happened was, you know that how Jesus said, man must live not on bread alone, but on every utterance coming forth from Jehovah's mouth. So Adam could not have eaten his way to everlasting life. He had to have communication with Jehovah. And when Adam rebelled against Jehovah's rule, he lost that peaceful relationship he had with him. And since then, man's history has been filled with hatred, war, violence, and disobedience to Jehovah's laws. Now, the sad thing is, today people equate peace and security with the absence of war, protection by police. So in Ottawa, you live in a peace and security and safety of high security buildings. But such conditions don't constitute true peace and security. That's what we're going to get into. So to restore peace with God, what do we need to do? Well, we have to recognize our spiritual need. Happy are those conscious of their spiritual need, Jesus said. So if we want to be happy, and so that means we have peace in our lives, we need to acknowledge that need and build a relationship with Jehovah, communicate with him. And then like any good relationship, what does it need? Love and respect. So we need to love God and have deep respect for his righteous principles. And that's essential to having peace and security. For example, in that same place in the Bible, at Matthew 5, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus told us how to have peace in our family and the congregation. He said, we have two options. If we have a problem, he said, we have option A, we can forgive and forget. Forgive others their debts as we have been forgiven. Or, well, I can't forgive. I mean, if you know what that person did, okay. Option B, seek peace, go to the person, work it out. You know, but I just can't talk to him right now. You know, he's just, okay. Option A, forgive and forget. I can't forget it. Like, if you just knew, okay, option B, go to him and work it out. But he can't be spoken to. Like, I can't talk to him. Okay, option A, forgive and forget. But I can't forgive. If you have any idea, okay, option B, go to him and work it out. But I can't go to him and option A, forgive and forget. But I can't forget. Option B. So you have option A and option B. Option C isn't even scriptural. Start talking about it with everybody else, cause problem. So, and we love Jehovah and we respect this principle amongst others to have peace in the congregation. Now that's the first thing, appreciating that we need to be dependent on Jehovah for his guidance and also being at peace with him. The second thing though, is Satan's removal. That will open the way for real peace and security. Why? Let's go to 1 John 5:19. The world today, more than ever, is influenced by Satan. And in 1 John 5:19, it tells us why. It says, we know that we originate with God, but the whole world is lying in the power of the wicked one. So how are we to understand this? Well, let's say we go to a house, we knock on the door. Kids come to the door, disheveled, hungry, dirty, uneducated, impolite. Who do you blame? Who do you blame? The parents, right? Where's your mom and dad? What's going on here? Knock on the same door. Kids come to the door, well-fed, well-dressed, well-educated, polite. To whom goes the credit? The parents. So the same thing, when we look at this world, how governments treat each other, how they treat people, do they reflect the personality of the loving God, Jehovah? Or isn't it more the personality of Satan, who's hateful, a killer of man from his beginning. He lied to Adam and Eve and caused their murder. And what's happened is shortly after God's kingdom began ruling in 1914, Satan was hurled to the earth, according to Revelation 12 and 9. And since then, Satan has intensified his efforts to mislead man, with hatred, warfare, and other woes increasing. Revelation 12, 12 says, "Woe to the earth and for the sea, for the devil has come down to you with great anger, knowing he has a short period of time." And Satan's superhuman and evil influence dooms all human efforts to bring about peace. But Jehovah assures us that it's still his purpose to have lasting peace on earth. Psalm 37 says that the meek will inherit the earth and they will have an abundance of peace. And he will do so by means of Jesus, the Prince of Peace. But first, we've reached a time when significant developments and earth-shaking events prophesied in the Bible are about to occur. One development that is yet to take place is mentioned at 1 Thessalonians 5, 2 and 3. So let's open to that. But before we read it, let's provide some context to the words at 1 Thessalonians. So in the first century, when Jesus and his apostles, when Jesus was on earth, and they referred to the law and the prophets, the Bible, that was only the Hebrew scriptures. So what many call the Old Testament today. And the first book to come out of the Christian Greek scriptures, or the New Testament, was the Gospel of Matthew. It came out in 41 CE. So maybe you can imagine the Apostle Paul in his missionary journey. So he does his first missionary journey. He goes up towards what today is called Turkey, comes back to the Middle East. And he's got this little codex of the book of Matthew. And he's going around and to the different synagogues and places, proofing that Jesus is the Christ. And then on his second missionary journey, he goes in through Turkey, goes up into Europe, gets to Greece, visits the city of Thessalonica. And those Thessalonians had a curiosity because in Matthew, you have what we call today Matthew chapters 24 and 25, which discuss the sign of the last days. And they really wanted to know more about that topic. So as the Apostle Paul goes down towards Athens and Corinth, when he's at Corinth, he writes the first letter to the congregation in Thessalonica. And that was the second book written in the Christian Greek scriptures. So all you had at that point for the New Testament was Matthew and 1 Thessalonians. So now, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 2 says, "For you yourselves know very well that Jehovah's day is coming exactly as a thief in the night." Well, these are Jesus' words. The Thessalonians would have recognized them. That's written in the book of Matthew. Verse 3. Here's a little tidbit. "Whenever it is that they are saying peace and security, then sudden destruction is to be instantly on them, just like birth pains on a pregnant woman, and they will by no means escape." So, if we start from like birth pains on a pregnant woman. So if we're aware that a woman is pregnant and there's birth pains, we know that a baby is coming. We're not surprised. And sometimes, you know, the pains come. Oh, it's time. Let's get the go bag. Let's get in the car. We go to the hospital. Okay. False alarm. Let's get back home. We got to wait. But it's going to happen. You know. So then, when it says sudden destruction is to be instantly upon them, like a surprise, well, it's a surprise to them because they didn't really care, but not so much for us. And if we could have the first picture, please. So whenever it is that they are saying peace and security, then sudden destruction is to be instantly upon them. So the cry of peace, of security, may be one event or a series of events involving political leaders, possibly religious leaders will join them in saying that we have finally accomplished peace and security. Now, as to the complete fulfillment of this prophecy, it's wise to wait and see what develops on the world scene. But God's word assures us that this will happen. What else does it assure us of? Well, let's go to Revelation chapter 17, And if we could have the second picture, please. Picture the scene. A harlot is sitting on the back of a fearsome beast. The beast has 7 heads and 10 horns. Whom does the harlot represent? Well, she exerts influence over the kings of the earth, according to Revelation chapter 17. She dresses in purple, uses incense, and is exceedingly wealthy. In addition, by means of her spiritistic practice, all the nations are misled. The Bible helps us to see that this harlot is a worldwide religious entity. She depicts not one religion, but all religions that produce rotten fruit. The beast that the harlot rides pictures the world's political powers. False religion straddles the back of this political beast, attempting to influence its decisions and to control its direction. Soon, though, an amazing event will take place. If we look at Revelation chapter 17 and verses 15 and 16, and if we could have the third picture, please. He said to me, "The waters that you saw where the prostitute is sitting mean peoples and crowds and nations and tongues. And the 10 horns that you saw and the wild beast, these will hate the prostitute and will make her devastated and naked, and they will eat up her flesh and completely burn her with fire." So in a sudden, shocking move, the world's political powers will turn on false religion and completely destroy her. If we could have the fourth picture, please. What will prompt this action? The book of Revelation answers in verse 17, God put it into their hearts to carry out his thought. Yes, God will call false religion to account for all its despicable acts that she's committed. And so the end will come in two stages. First, God will destroy organized religion, portrayed as a prostitute named Babylon the Great. And then next, God will turn his attention to the political rulers themselves, the kings of the earth. So after the destruction of false religion, God's kingdom will crush all human governments at Armageddon. Thereafter, Satan, the devil, will be removed, opening the way for a millennium of real peace and security. So what does that mean? Well, let's see together in Revelation, in chapter 21 and verse 4. Revelation 21 and verse 4. There it says, "And he will wipe out every tear from their eyes, and death will be no more. Neither will mourning, nor outcry, nor pain be any more. The former things have passed away." So where do people die? In heaven or on earth? On earth. So where does this prophecy have to be fulfilled? Isn't it here on earth? So God promises real peace and security for those who will live on earth after Satan has been removed. Peace with fellow men and wild animals. So no more pain, no more fear. Paradise conditions, good health, and plenty of food for everyone. So no more headache pain, no more back pain, no more chronic pain, no stomach pain, no emotional pain, satisfying work, no more death, no more sorrow. So imagine, if you will, a post-Armageddon walk. First, you'll be very happy. We survived. We survived the Great Tribulation. And as you continue walking outside to see where your neighbors are and what's happening, you see that older sister that used to give those beautiful comments at the meeting. And you run to her and you hug and you laugh and you hug and you laugh. And suddenly it hits you because she's standing, because she's had to use a wheelchair for the last several years. And as you continue to walk, you see that blind brother that used to be in your congregation, and he puts his hand on your face to see if he can match the tactile image he had in his head with the one that he now sees with his eyes. He opens his eyes, says, "Yep, no change." Another brother who you knew was deaf, he's running and he's yelling and he's yelling and he's singing and enjoying at the top of his voice. And, you know, time is passing. We're fixing the earth from the damage that's happened to it. And a while goes by. And one day, suddenly, you see her. You know her walk, the way she moves her head. Last time you saw her, it was in the hospital, skinny, her body full of tubes. You can't believe it. It's your mother. You run to her. You run. You hug. You kiss. You cry. You laugh, you cry. This is the kingdom. You never worry when your wife or children go out of the house. You never worry when you get a phone call too early in the morning or too late at night. You know that all your friends and neighbors care for and love you. This is real peace and security. That's what we mean. That's the definition we're talking about. So what must we do? We must act. We must act now and learn how we can benefit ourselves. Let's open together to Micah chapter 4, verses 3 and 4. Now, Micah lived at the same time as Isaiah. And so these words are going to seem very familiar because Isaiah also said them. It's kind of like, you know, we're here in North America, but Jehovah's Witnesses on the other side of the globe, we give the same service presentation, have the same message for people. So the same thing with Micah and Isaiah. And Isaiah's words that we're going to read here are actually on a plaque in front of the United Nations. But we're going to see what it actually means as we read them here. So in Micah chapter 4, verses 3 and 4, it says, "He will render judgment among many peoples and set matters straight respecting mighty nations far away. They will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning shears. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, nor will they learn war anymore. They will sit each one under his vine and under his fig tree, and no one will make them afraid, for the mouth of Jehovah of armies has spoken." So when will this happen? Is this in the paradise, in the future, after Armageddon? Well, let's look at the context. Verse 5 says, "For all the peoples will walk, each in the name of its God." Well, we know that religion is going to be destroyed first before Armageddon, so it can't be after Armageddon. And then if we go up to verse 1, it says, "In the final part of the days." Well, that's right now. So this is getting fulfilled now. For example, what does it mean to learn war no more? Well, as an organization, Jehovah's Witnesses proclaim that the solution to mankind's problems rests with God's government. On the other hand, churches repeatedly voice support for human governments. Now, in the past, and even in the present, Jehovah's Witnesses have felt a responsibility to make people aware about the position that their religious leaders are taking. So in 1938, for example, Jehovah's people explained how the Catholic Church helped and supported the rise of Hitler and other fascist governments, and its push in many nations to make Catholicism the state religion. When World War II erupted, nearly every organized religion sent its troops into the battle. French and American Catholics killed German and Italian Catholics. British and American Protestants killed German Protestants. Now, Jehovah's Witnesses wanted to make it clear that they were no part of this controversy. The Watchtower of November 1st, 1939 reasoned, "How can a person who is devoted to God's kingdom favor one side or the other in a conflict between factions of the world?" And we had a very, very similar watchtower a couple of years ago discussing that very same point. And when we see things on our doorstep, we appreciate how necessary this is, because it defined what neutrality meant. We're not pacifists. Jehovah's not a pacifist, and neither is his son, Jesus Christ. And when it comes to being in support of some cause, we're 100% in support of the kingdom. And so we can't engage in any of the world's controversies or share in their war efforts. And this stand has led to our persecution by dictatorships and democracies around the world. But this is something so fundamental to Jehovah's people. We are absolutely no part of the world. We must be strictly neutral when it comes to any conflict. There's no other people that are entirely neutral to the world, but Jehovah's people are. Well, what about on a personal level? Well, Consider the example of a 17-year-old Christian girl in Korea. When she began to serve Jehovah God, her family disapproved and she had to move out of the house. However, instead of becoming angry, she prayed about the matter, letting God's word and spirit mold her thinking. Thereafter, she wrote to her family often, filling her letters with the genuine warm affection that she felt for them. Now, if you've studied with anyone that has had that situation and there's communication problems in the family, it is a hard thing to do what this sister did. It's much easier to simply just get involved in with the friends in the congregation and just not call or talk to your family anymore. But she didn't do that. She wrote to them consistently, and in response, her two older brothers began to study the Bible and are now dedicated Christians. Her mother and younger brother also accepted Bible truth. And lastly, her father, who had been bitterly opposed, had a change of heart. The witness girl writes, "We all married fellow Christians, and our family of united worshipers now totals 23. What a victory for love. So do we want to cultivate this genuine love and help others do the same? Well, we have to go to the source of love, Jehovah. Or another experience, some years ago, a man who had studied the Bible for a time with Jehovah's Witnesses was still somewhat skeptical about brotherly love. He knew that Jesus said, John 13:35, "By this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love amongst yourselves." But he found it hard to believe. One day, he got to see Christian love in action. Though confined to a wheelchair, this man was traveling far from home. In Bethlehem, he attended a congregation meeting. And Bethlehem is in the Arabic-speaking part. There, an Arab witness insisted that another witness tourist stay with his family for the night. And this Bible student was included in the invitation. Before going to bed, the student asked his host for permission to go out onto the veranda in the morning to watch the sunrise. His host sternly warned him that he must not do that. The next day, this Arab brother explained the reason. Through an interpreter, he said that if his neighbors knew that he had guests of a Jewish background, as was the case with this Bible student, they would burn his house to the ground with him and his family inside. Confused, the Bible student asked him, "Why then did you take such a risk?" Without the interpreter, the Arab brother looked him in the eye and simply said, John 13:35. Bible student was deeply impressed with the reality of brotherly love and was baptized shortly thereafter. So learn war no more. Today, Jehovah's servants already conform to his requirements by not learning war anymore and dwelling in peace with each other. And learning or studying means acquiring knowledge of Jehovah, developing a close relationship with him. And if we aren't doing that, we could study the Bible with Jehovah's Witnesses so that they can help us to do so. And we too can enjoy this peace and security even now by obeying Jehovah's laws, even in this turbulent world. So when we're at peace with Jehovah, and when finally Satan is removed, we will have true peace and security. And soon real and lasting worldwide peace and security will arrive, and now is the time to put our full trust in Jehovah.
Thank you so much, Brother Alcori, for your very encouraging public talk this morning, and by means of the scriptures, for helping us to appreciate that true peace and security is very close by means of God's kingdom, and how we all look forward to that time. So thank you very much, Brother Alcori. We appreciated your talk. And just to